You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Friday. Congratulations to all of us. That's right. You know what we is. So welcome on Friday. Glad to have you. For whatever reason, I'm waking up like at 3:50 in the morning. What's up with that? Anyway, that's the way it's working these days. And so then I wrestle with, should I try to go back to sleep or should I just get up, take a shower, and get my day going, right? I mean, like, I've done that on a fairly, when you can't sleep, what do? Lay in bed? Come on, man. Who does that? Yeah, it didn't work for me when I was a little kid. I'm not laying in bed here. What's your mom going to say if you get up and start roaming around? I don't know. We'll find out. Wait, worse is that she's going to spank the shit out of me. I can deal with that. So I lay in bed. I got ready to get up. Then I fell back asleep. Yeah. So, I don't know. Sleeping is not my strong suit. I wish I was better at sleeping. My oldest? Yeah, Johnny boy. John is, if you could become a professional eater and sleeper, he would crush it. He eats like few human beings I've ever seen in my life. He annihilates food. When he's done in the Marine Corps and he just stops and he becomes like just a normal person, he will weigh 600 pounds. You'll see him on some reality TV show. Yeah. So he better not stop PTing in his life because he can crush a training table. Absolutely annihilate it. And then he can go to sleep, and he's one of those people who go to sleep anywhere. And not just sleep for an hour, but out. I've never been able to do that. I've always, I haven't really envied people. Except when I wish I could sleep, which isn't very often. I wish I could just sleep, and I don't need to sleep that much, 6 hours? the first thing would, it would be nice if it could be undisturbed, right? Wake up. Oh, that felt good. Yeah, I don't, doesn't happen to me often. So, anyway, how do you improve as a sleeper? There's a good question for you. How do you improve as a sleeper? I should explore that. It could, does it just take practice? Take medication. I've been thinking about the whole Supreme Court thing, right? And so the whole Me Too thing, sexual assault, all of it, right? So, and I think what we as a culture wrestle with is serious subject, right? Serious subject. We don't victim shame in our culture, right? Where is the balance point in all of it, though? So, let's just suppose that, for the sake of discussion, that something happened at a party in high school, and no police report was filed, there's no corroborating evidence or witness. Let's just suppose that that's the case. What do you do with that? And where does that in a nation of you're presumed innocent until proven guilty? How do you treat the person coming forward with that information with respect, at the same time being fair to her accuser, who deserves as much respect in the system, right? He or she is presumed guilty until, right? Until at some point, if it ever were to go to court, they're judged by a jury of their peers. So I've been thinking about this. So where is that balance point? Well, you're not going to find it in today's, in our media. And so that's, I don't know, I wouldn't even say disconcerting, because if you look for, it can only be disconcerting if you look for concert in our media. If you look for responsible behavior in our media and people that find balance points in our media, which we all know is foolhardy. It's not the case. Okay? So the only way it could be disconcerting is if you did look to them for that. And so clearly, since nobody does, then, you know, then it can't be disconcerting. All right? So to the topic at hand, what is fair? What is right? Right? And does somebody who would, okay, and so that's presuming that she's telling the truth. Let's presume that she's not telling the truth. Let's presume that this isn't true. So, an allegation that's never surfaced in the course of anybody's hearings or career, an allegation over which there was no police report filed, and nothing else corroborating, all of a sudden stops the nation, stops this. So where is the balance point in all that? Where is the balance point in all of that? So, again, there's been much written about the Me Too, about the Me Too thing. And I don't know, in watching this spectacle that will get even crazier next week over the balance of power in the Supreme Court, it wasn't introduced deliberately during the hearings because it can't stand scrutiny. Did somebody look at it? And some evidently this letter has been in the hands of somebody since July. So somebody looked at it and did whatever digging and said to somebody else, do not introduce this. That's how the game gets played. It just seems to me what is fair and what is right. And the whole thing, well, we want an FBI investigation. What? Right? When a crime has been committed, there's a certain way we handle it. I don't know. It just seems to me the craziest of crazies. So, anyway, that's in my head today. What is fair? What is right? To each of them, somebody who's led a distinguished life by all accounts, who's gone through confirmations before. And all of a sudden, at the 11th hour and the 59th minute, and the 59th minute of the 11th hour, and about the 50th second of that minute, all of a sudden, this gets kind of thrown out there. Nobody can, Senator Feinstein, who introduced, I can't really vouch for the authenticity, you know, blah, 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 blah. So, I don't know. It's to me, it's senators behaving badly, which is routine now in our country. And I think it's a sad day. What, in my opinion, as soon as Senator Feinstein got this, if we weren't going to play political games, and we were, again, Mac, are you kidding me? Like, what are you, stupid? If we weren't going to play political games and we were interested in the truth, it should have been turned over to, you know, Senate Judiciary Committee investigators who would have contacted her and come back with a report saying that we believe this to be legitimate, or we believe this not to be legitimate, or while she is legitimate and her story is sincere, there is no corroborating evidence. She will come here and she will tell her story, which is unverifiable. How should we proceed? And then you would get the political game to get to play. So anyway, that's going on in the world today. I, over the course of hanging meat, and I played a bunch of cuts yesterday on the post-traumatic winning kind of class. And it honestly, the Almarine Radio archives are incredible. I'm going to play for you a little something. It's about 37 minutes of audio here in a few minutes. I don't know that I'm going to get to the news today, and then the chef will join us. So I've got, let's see, if it's 37 minutes of audio, that means it's got to start in eight. 9 minutes. It's got to start 9 minutes. Yeah, my math not so good this morning. All right, so, it's Jeremiah Workman's interview. And I have a version of it that I've cut down it's about 2.5-hour interview, and I cut it down to put short versions of it up in different places. It's amazing. That interview is amazing. So, even if you've heard it before, and I've heard it a bunch of times, I sat and listened to these segments last night, and I was specifically looking for a certain segment of it, which I found, and but I listened to this 37 minutes and 4 seconds, and just amazing, 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 you know, and why every leader in the Marine Corps doesn't listen to this is beyond me. Because we don't study this stuff. So, That's what we're going to do. So let me open the program. Whitney Houston's going to sing. We'll check the weather. I don't know that we'll take a break. And if there's nothing cataclysmic going on in the world of Marine Corps news, which I don't believe there is, or I would have heard about it, you're going to hear some incredible audio. And like I said, I keep, as I begin to say, oh yeah, this cut ought to be in this presentation, this cut, and I go back and listen to it, it's like, you've got to be kidding me, man. This stuff is awesome. Awesome with a capital A. All right, so given that, Whitney Houston sings the national anthem this morning on a Friday, the 21st day of September, in the year 2018. Good morning to you. This is dedicated to Jeremiah Workman, who I've dedicated this before. But every time I hear, this interview, one, I'm struck by a couple things. One, his desire to tell his story repeatedly, because I had never met him. Mike had met, Mike knew Jeremiah, and introduced us, and he came on and did this interview, which is phenomenal. So the fact that he would share. That he would share the story again, the fact that he would go into opening up his life, and you hear the emotion in his voice, his heart, and his experiences for the benefit of everybody else, it reflects nothing but well on him. And you know what? And there's a good part even to this story, even to that. In the time since, in the 2.25 years since we've done this, the last time I had him on the program, he's turned a bit of a corner in his life. And he told me, he said, you know, I no longer blame myself and think about what I should have done that morning. You know, I've made peace with that. Which is a huge step. Which is a huge step. So, this is dedicated to him and his toughness, his courage, and all that you'll hear in about 3 minutes. Because I'm trying to be on time today.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran, and you came home, and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
All right. We got to win. Neller caught in 68 in Quantico. Sunny in 77 at Camp Lejeune. They've got flood warning in effect, which is the only hazardous weather statement gone, so that's down from about 5. But they continue to fight the water there, so all the best of luck to them. The Granbury, Texas, clouds in 78. Big Timber, Montana. It is mostly sunny and 37 degrees. I got an email from my quality assurance person up in Church Bridge, Saskatchewan this morning. 39 degrees there. Yikes. What the hell, man? All right. Keeps the riffraff out. I know. Sunny in 71 in 29 Palms, California, so it'll be a nice day up in the desert. Cloudy in 54 at Pendleton. Yeah, so all you people that have cooler temperatures, you got cooler weather on the way behind those. Dark, cloudy, and 82 in Okinawa in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. It is clear, dark, and 87, 11 and a half hours in front of where we're at right now. So it would be 7 o'clock at night. Actually, 6:56 at night. In the evening, or 1856 for all you military dorks. Currently, at the home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny and 64 in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach, Southern California. And so it will be a gorgeous day. Not a cloud in the sky and a high of 77. Tomorrow, 81, and Sunday, 76. That's right. So, last night I'm roaming around on my radio, not in my archives, right? So I'm roaming around in my own archives looking for a piece of audio. I'm looking for a piece of audio and I just can't find, right? So that's how cool this is. But I know where it is. Okay. Cause sometimes I'm too smart for my own good and I do things So, and then I go look for it. It's not where I normally put stuff. And then I have to think, okay, genius, what did you do with it? Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at. All right. I'm just going to get out of the way of this. Okay. Jeremiah Workman has been on the program a number of times. This interview, though, was my introduction to him and his story. So this is about 37 minutes of audio of that, and it is absolutely incredible to listen to again. So what I did was I listened to the whole 2.5 hours, and I took out kind of the you know, setting up pieces and some of the narrative that we did, and I tried to distill it to the most powerful moments in the two and a half hours of the interview, I think it was. Okay, and of that, there's still, I could only get it down to 37 minutes. It's like because I was trying to shrink it, because, you know, they tell you on YouTube, and it's like, hey, you know, 10, 15 minutes at the most, if you have to go over 5 minutes, okay, because people just don't have the appetite for it. So I'm like, I can't do that. I can take this 40 minutes and chop it up into smaller pieces. I could do that. But listen to this. It's amazing. And this is, so again, this is under the theme of, as I hang audio and video that I've used in the program over the course of the last 2.5 years, it's incredible. It's incredible how much just incredible audio stuff that I have in the archives of All Marine Radio. Here's Jeremiah Workman from an interview we did 2 years and 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Tell me about your Navy Cross. First, let me ask you a blunt question. The things you did that day, did you think you were doing anything special, or did you think you were just doing what you were supposed to do?
No, I don't feel like I did anything special at all. I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to do. In fact, I felt like there was probably more I could have done. Looking back, I kick myself in the ass every day, and it's like, why didn't you do this, or why didn't you do that? And it's something that I struggle with. I've tried to move past that, but it's just something that still bothers me to this day. You know, what else could I have done, or you just second guess yourself, and like 2 or 3 houses into a clearing, the guys on the other side of the street, I just heard AKs and M16 fire open up. So I grabbed my guys that I had, and we ran across the street, and it was a hornet's nest. They were pinned down. Most of the Marines were pinned down on the second floor of the house. And it was in the area of Fallujah where it was the big houses.
Right.
Kind of the rich area is what I tell people.
Yep.
Nicer houses.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, but this just went on and on. I mean, this was 2.5, 3 hours of going back and forth. The whole time the Marines were on the second story fighting for their lives. And we just, you know, we couldn't get to them because of the amount of firepower that was up there. And finally, another group of Marines were able to jump from the house beside us as we were fighting with the Mujin side, occupying them. They were able to retrieve our Marines that had been killed and wounded and get them out of that house. But It was intense. I mean, but I definitely don't look at myself like I did any, like I said earlier, I was just trying to keep people alive and do what I was trained to do, which is lead Marines. And you know, the real heroes that day paid the ultimate sacrifice. And I had guys beside me, Philip Levine, Steve Snell, Jerome Smoke, Doc Sonny. I mean, those are the real heroes. And then, obviously, our three Marines that paid the ultimate sacrifice. I just happened to have the opportunity to serve with these awesome Marines. And, Yeah, I believe we got home around April or May of 05. And it was definitely time to come home. You know, with the battalion as a whole, we got hit pretty hard over there. I think we lost 19 Marines. And it was definitely time to come home. And got back to Pendleton. And it was just weird. It was weird coming home, three Marines shy than what we went over there with. Feeling like a complete failure, you know.
Explain that, because people don't understand that. You know, here you are, a Navy Cross winner, feeling like a failure. Why did you feel like a failure?
Well, your goal, you want to go over there, you want to lead, you want to kick ass, take names, and bring everybody home. That's the name of the game. And that didn't happen. And in my mind, I failed. Or we didn't get to them fast enough in the house to allow them to escape. And that's just several of us, I think, live with that to this day.
That in spite of what you did, the inability to get there quick enough means that you failed, and that's what leaders live with in combat at the small unit level.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I had spent, it was about a year and a half after we had gotten back home when I received the award.
Right.
So I'd been dealing with this and trying to control it, and I wasn't doing a very good job of controlling these issues to begin with. And when I got that award, it just opened everything. It was like a brand new wound, and it brought everything to the forefront. And it was like everything just came right back to me. I was like, you're right, you know, everybody's coming up to you, hey, congrats. And it's like, oh my God, man, I shouldn't have this. I don't want this. I can't deal with this. I don't need this. I want this three Marines back.
What was the first sign that you knew that you had changed?
I think before I went, I was very tight with my money. I made sound decisions with my money. I wasn't a real big drinker. I mean, I'd go out and have some drinks every once in a while, but I wasn't wild. And when I came back, I was blowing through my money like crazy. I was drinking like a fish, I mean, to excess every single night. I was that guy that was throwing up on the PT run and would keep going. And but everybody else around me was doing the same thing, so I just chalked it up to, well, this, hell, we're all just dealing with stuff. Yeah, it was getting ugly. Right, wheels were falling off.
Your story is not an uncommon story. You know, what's in common about you is the Navy Cross that gets piled on top of it, and then, you know, and then there's notoriety that comes with that, right?
No, I, one day, I get this award. The next day, you know, I'm getting relieved as a drill instructor for PTSD. I feel like my career is over. But then I have this Navy Cross and Marine Corps sending me around to, I went to all these events and I met everybody in the Marine Corps and I was hanging out at all these black tie events and it was too much. It was way too much. And, you know, I spent time out on the road. I did a speaking tour with Marcus Luttrell and a couple other guys.
Okay.
It's just the boozing and the just bad decisions. And it just had spiraled out of control.
Do you remember the first time you thought about taking your life?
Yeah, it had gotten to be commonplace, actually.
What?
I'd be out on my motorcycle, and I'd be riding 70 miles an hour in a 25 zone, praying somebody would pull out and I'd hit them. Or I would drink a fifth of Jack Daniels and hope that I wouldn't wake up. Or, you know, I had all these thoughts. But I actually went home to Ohio on leave when I got relieved as a drone instructor, and it got a little more serious once I got back to Ohio and was away from, I felt my career was over.
Right.
I grabbed a rifle, took a bunch of pills, and luckily my father-in-law heard me getting into the gun case. And he came out and grabbed the rifle from me, and thank God.
Would you have killed yourself that night?
You know, I was in such a bad, dark place. I don't know if I was just, I think I would have. I was at rock bottom.
Did anybody try to intervene and talk to you? What kind of efforts had people made up to that point to talk to you and help you?
It wasn't until I got relieved as a drill instructor. That's when my battalion sergeant major, and I owe him a debt of gratitude, he hand-walked me down to medical at Parris Island.
And you had never, up to that point, you had never been to, you had never seen a mental health professional?
No.
Okay.
Not at Camp Pendleton. I went through DI school. I went through McQuist school. I started working recruits. And I was the whole time losing my mind, literally. And then on top of that, I get the Navy Cross. Right after I get relieved. I actually got relieved, and then I got the Navy Cross.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. One day I'm a scumbag, and the next day everybody wanted to be my friend.
And the whole time, though, you're convinced that your career's over and you're a failure in dealing with those feelings.
Yeah.
But you had never been to see mental health. That's hard to believe.
You know, I think I was one of the... Back then, nobody, it was like PTSD, what? Who? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Here's a fistful of drugs. We want you to take the drugs so you don't hurt yourself or anybody else and just walk around in a, be a zombie so you just don't hurt anybody. That's essentially what they did to me. I was so numb. I couldn't tell whether I was coming or going. I remember one time pulling up to work there at Parris Island, passing out with the truck still running, and I sat there in the truck. They found me 3 hours later sleeping in my truck because I was just zonked out. You know, and this is just, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Are you still drinking at that point?
Oh, yeah. I really say there was two things that helped me. One was the birth of my son. When he was born, I was like, you know, you got to get your shit together. You cannot just be in this dazed and confused all the time. You can't be a zombie. And then the second thing was, when I left Paris Island, they gave me orders to Quantico so I could be closer to Bethesda for better health care.
Right.
And General Tryon was the CG down at Paris Island, had transferred up and took over recruiting command at Quantico. And when I checked in to Quantico, he brought me up for an office call. And he's like, "Hey, Double Dog, is there anything you need? Is there anything you want? You know, I'm here to help you." I said, "Sir, I've never had anybody with a star ask me if I want or need anything. So I'm just going to shoot." He goes, "Go ahead." I said, "I'd like to go to junk school. I want to feel like a Marine again." He goes, "You want to go to junk school? You're going to junk school, son." It was that easy. Yeah, junk school was pretty cool. There was only 11 Marines. There was like 350 of us in the class. And we had a blast. We graduated on the Marine Corps birthday, so they let all the Marines jump out on our last jump together, and we sang the Marine Corps hymn as we were coming down. It was pretty cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was neat. But I felt like a Marine again. I was doing something Marine-ish. I hadn't done that in a long time.
How important was that to you?
Oh, it meant the world to me. I felt like a scumbag, to be honest with you. Like I was just useless. Yeah, I kept going to mental health, and things would get better, and then I'd do it, you know, one step forward, two steps back. I'd play that game. It was like I was running in sand.
Right.
Back on the medication. And then, you know, they had me working at the Marine Corps Museum. That was my new job at Quantico when I got back from jump school. So every day for 6 months, I had to stand there and dress Blues or Charlies and basically, it was the weirdest thing. A lot of people knew I was there. And
did you hate it?
Oh, it was terrible.
You know, you've seen, what the hell is the movie? Oh, well, Flags of Our Father, right?
Yeah.
Did you relate to the parts where those guys came home and they were on that bond tour and people were calling them heroes and getting paraded out in front of everybody and they're not dealing with it? Did you relate to that when you saw that?
That's exactly what I felt like. That's exactly what I felt like. People would come in the museum, "Can we get pictures with you? Can we do it?" I'd go home, just drink. Give me a beer.
Give me a beer.
No, I kind of just kept myself. I mean, there was a few folks I talked to, but for the most part, I kind of stayed to myself. It was weird. A lot of the higher ups, I could talk to them. Like, I remember having a conversation with General Lefevre and General Coleman, and you know, they all knew how I felt and were very supportive and things like that. I got kind of close with General Mattis, and but yeah, it was just. It was so bizarre. Even when I first was awarded the Navy Cross, I didn't even wear the ribbon at Paris Island for probably 3 weeks.
Why?
I associated it with nothing but fat. Well, that came about. I told you I had been out doing the speaking tour thing,
right.
And I, after one of the speeches, a guy came up to me, and he said, "Have you ever thought about putting your story down on paper?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I think you should. I think you could help a lot of people." And I said, "Well, if I could help some people, and I could quit telling my story, I'm all for it. Because everybody asks, what happened, what happened, what happened? How'd you do this? What was it? And that was my motivation behind it was, if I can help, because the book's not all about combat. I'd say 25% of it is about what happened in Fallujah. The rest is my struggles with PTSD and how I kind of overcame that and moved on and kind of control it and not let it control me. But that's how it happened. 2009.
Hey, good looking picture on the cover, by the way.
Down the hair.
Go look at that. Got those big bushy eyebrows going. No.
Oh, yeah.
Got your drum friends on there? That's awesome. Is the book a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I thought it was good. I thought it was therapeutic for me. I felt like, I had a ghostwriter help me do it. And just working through the process.
What, that Marion, Ohio public education didn't work for you?
Exactly.
What's up with that?
Yeah.
English teacher at MHS?
Yeah. No, it was therapeutic. And I felt like I got the story out there, at least, you know, what I saw that day, how I remembered it. And I felt like I had 1,000 pounds off my shoulders. And I started getting a shit ton of messages on Facebook. Hey, brother, you're not alone, or I'm dealing with this. You've helped me. You've helped my son. You've helped my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And it just, I was like, you know what? I'm really glad I did this. And to this day, I've gotten messages from all over the world, actually, you know, saying, hey, you've helped me. Sometimes it's not even combat related. It's been sexual trauma, or it's been, I was wrongly accused and put in prison. Now I finally got out of prison and I read your book. It's helped me. I mean, it's been good.
Okay, what about when you wrote the book? Are you still drinking at that time? Were you going to mental health? Were you making progress? I mean, were you on your upswing then?
Yeah, when the book came out, believe it or not, that was probably some of the heaviest drinking I did, just because I was out on the road so much. I spent a lot of time out on the road doing speeches and things like that. And
so Life of Our Father comes out, and you see Ira Hayes.
Yeah.
What do you think?
There's actually a line in my book about drunken Ira Hayes.
Really?
Absolutely.
And you could totally identify with him?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I had more than one person in my family say they're going to find you dead somewhere in a hotel.
How does this story get better? Or when did you get out of the Marine Corps?
I got out in January of 2010.
All right, so now we're going. Your son is born. You said things that make it better. Your son is born in February of 2007. You go to jump school. The book comes out when?
September of 2009.
September of 2009. And are you still working at the museum?
No, actually, I was working for the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps as a driver.
Wow. Were you a good driver?
We got everywhere we had to go, and we never had any accidents. He'd probably tell you I was a bad driver, but that was the best tour, actually, next to being in 3-5.
Right.
I loved working for that man. He helped me through a lot of stuff, and he's like a father figure to me. He's like my second dad to this day.
All right, tell everybody who that was.
Sergeant Major Kent.
Sergeant Major Kent.
The 16th Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps.
What got you out of the Marine Corps? Were you medically discharged? How did you get out of the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I was actually medically retired for PTSD and TBI.
How did you deal with the whole being medically retired thing?
Well, it had gotten to the point where I went from the museum to I was Sergeant Major Kent's driver for 2 years, and then back to Quantico to the Wounded Warrior Regiment. And it was made very clear to me that I was not going back to the infantry. So at that point, they said I could stay in the Marine Corps as long as I wanted to, but I was not going back to the infantry. And that was what I wanted to do. Right. So.
That was your professional hope, and I get through this stuff, I'll go back to the grunts, I'll be with my people, I'll be with my tribe, I'll be good to go.
Yep. When I was on the med board, I actually had come to terms with, you know, if I can't go back to the infantry, I think it's time for me to move on to the next chapter of my life.
So let me bring us up to date on the mental health stuff. So you're going to see mental health providers, and are you making progress or not making progress relative to your PTSD?
As far as
and your demons.
What time period?
We're talking when you're driving for the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps before your med board.
No, I was going to mental health quite a bit. I was making pretty good progress. Sergeant Major Kent was instrumental in getting me back on my feet, and like I said, he was like a father to me, and he just played a significant role in getting me out. Not just me, but my family, and that really started to get me to where I need to be.
So then, when they sat you down and counseled you and said, "Hey, look, you're just not going to get there. You're not going to be able to be full up round." Did you accept that at first when you heard that news, or how did that play in Peoria?
I was bummed out because after I reenlisted the first time, I knew I was going to do at least 20 years in the Marine Corps. That was my goal.
Right.
But I had to take a serious, honest look in the mirror, and I knew, like, would I really trust myself to lead Marines in combat? I had to ask myself that question. And that was tough.
And what was the answer?
I don't think I would trust myself.
Why not?
Just, if God forbid another bad experience like what happened in Fallujah, and
you wouldn't be able to live with it.
Yeah, I'm not fully over it.
Right. And people have told you you're not gonna get over it, right?
Who, yeah.
You're not getting over that.
Yeah, it's a lot of people have told me, you know, PTSD goes away when you die.
There you go. So you're getting med boarded. And you have to accept that. And do you make peace with it, Jeremiah?
I do. I, like I said, I knew I wasn't going back to the infantry, so I didn't have a choice. I made peace with it. And I started focusing on the next part of my life, the transition. I knew I had a family I had to take care of. And I didn't really have time to sit around and pout about it. So
that's a long, rough road. Are you still drinking as much at that point when you're getting out?
No, not nearly as much. No, I've really slowed down a lot. Thank God.
Would you still be alive if you weren't married, if your wife didn't hang in there with you?
You know, between her, Sergeant Major Kent, Sergeant Major Booth, some of these other folks that have been in my life? I don't think so. I don't know where I'd be.
Talk to me about the advice that you give to other veterans. You're working for the VA now, helping Marines, you know, get the things that they deserve. What advice when you talk about post-combat related mental health and you hear other guys hurting and they're struggling, what advice do you give them?
Well, the first thing I tell these guys and gals is you cannot be afraid to raise your hand and get help. There was a time in the Marine Corps where it was not okay to raise your hand and say you needed help. We're past that in the Marine Corps.
Are you sure? Are you convinced of that?
I'm convinced. I believe that if you need help, the Marine Corps will get you help. I believe that.
Do you believe that you'll suffer professionally because of that?
No. I know plenty of Marines that have PTSD diagnosis, that got promoted, they're staff NCOs, they're moving up the ranks, and it hasn't affected them one bit. So that's the number one thing I tell them is you've got to raise your hand. You've got to say something. If you don't say anything, you're going to live with this. Or try to live with it like I did, and that's not good. When the monkeys make a jailbreak, nothing good happens.
Wait a minute. Say that again?
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage, in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Keep the monkey in the damn cage.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. Do you consider it a duty of yours that you have a voice, people recognize you, and that you have, while you have that voice and while you have a platform, you can make a difference in their lives, and you feel kind of morally obligated as a leader to go do that? Do you feel that burden as well?
Yeah, I could never say no.
Right.
Especially when it was Marines asking,
right,
hey, can you come here and speak, or could you come to a warrior night or a mess night or whatever the case may be?
Right.
I never say no. Because the fact that they're asking me, I mean, it's humbling. And it means the world to me that they even give it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, or rat's ass, either one.
And, but it is definitely time for me to slow down a little bit and spend a little more time with the family.
The first thing you said is don't be afraid to raise your hand. And then we got into this discussion about is there a stigma or not, and that led us to other places. What's the second thing you tell them?
Just, so you got to raise your hand. And then the second thing is whatever you, if it's medication, it's medication. If it's talk therapy, if it's group therapy, whatever it is that helps you, stick with it. Because a lot of people, they go to counseling two or three times and they feel better, and then they stop and then they relapse, and it's just a dog chasing its tail. So you got to stick with it until you get to a place where you're in control of it and it's not in control of you. And that's really what I tell people is until you can grab this thing by the horns, you need to stick with it. Because I've seen way too many people quit their meds. Oh, I feel great, man. I'm going to quit taking my meds. No, that's not a good idea. You know, they've gotten a lot better with the whole medication piece, too.
How so?
Back in the day. Well, like when I was first diagnosed, I mean, they shoved 13, 15 pills down my throat a day. Now I think I take 3. You know, just enough to you know, for depression and a few things like that. I mean, I'm not a zombie. I'm alert. I'm in my right mind. It just keeps me even keeled. So I don't think they're over-medicating people like they used to, you know, 10 years ago.
Interesting. Because that's one of the major complaints you hear from Marines is that, you know, they're more than willing to give me medications, and but nobody wants to talk to me, and I need to talk to somebody. I need to deal with this stuff I got in my head. Give some advice to Marines that feel that, that they're being over-medicated and they don't like it. Like you talked about being a zombie. I mean, I've heard that before, Jeremiah. You have so much experience in this field. What would you tell Marines to do that, that are feeling like that?
Yeah, if you feel like you're being over-medicated, only you know. You know when enough is enough. And if you got to switch doctors, you got to switch doctors. That's your right. You don't have to stay with the same guy or gal. I switched doctors several times until I found one that I actually liked. And we found a happy medium of medication and therapy. So if you feel like you're being over-medicated, you got to put your foot down and say, hey, doc, this isn't working. You know, I'm a zombie. It's affecting my family. It's affecting my job. And if they don't listen, you seek a new doctor. That's your right as a patient.
But don't quit. Don't quit going.
Don't quit. That's it. Don't quit. Yeah, it's awesome. You know, my son's fine. He's the starting quarterback on the football team now.
Yeah.
So I'm that guy on the sidelines hooping and hollering. I'm not the crazy dad.
No, you're not that guy?
Yeah. I'm not that guy. But I definitely do a little bit of yelling. My daughter, she acts just like me. It's almost scary a little bit. But you're right. Being a father is the greatest gift that you can be given. And I'm just glad that I was given really a second opportunity to be a dad, to be a husband, because I've screwed this thing up many a times. And the fact that they're still here, you know, it speaks a lot. It speaks volumes about my wife. And I wouldn't be where I'm at without her. And, you know, we're doing good. Things are good. Things are looking up.
That's right. First of all, I've taken up so much of your time, and I want you to know how much I appreciate your story. It's a powerful one, and with a good ending, which makes it a quintessentially Marine story. Because one of the things I hear all the time doing interviews is improvise, adapt, and overcome. You know, it's the motto of NCOs and leaders in the Marine Corps everywhere. And you have certainly gone down a tough road, and I just want to tell you how proud we are of you, and what a great example you are, because you're not a perfect guy, but you're a fighter, and you've hung in there, and you know your family's still intact, and you're the best days of your life are ahead of you. As your son gets ready to go to Ohio State playing football. And but it is, and it's a good ending, and God bless you, and thank you so much for coming on and your honesty and your frankness. What an awesome Marine in all the way around that you are, and thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I've listened to that interview a lot. But last night I was listening to clips of it, and I just sat there and listened to it. And Bob Nielsen just sent me a message. Bob Nielsen, he's a Facebook machine. But he just sent me this. Jeremiah should be mandatory listening for all in the military, and there ought to be. His story of. Here's a guy we decorated for being successful in combat with the second highest award for valor that we give in the Marine Corps and the United States Naval Services. In a fight in which he and his Marines, eight total, killed 24 and they lost three. So it wasn't a fair fight. And without Jeremiah's presence there, doing what he was doing, there probably would have been a lot more than three that that lost their life that day on our side. He comes home, and just the whole, you know, the enemy's got a vote in this stuff. You know, it's not only about what we do. They have a vote, too, in a fight. And it's a dynamic confrontation. But his takeaway as a leader, you know, is that he's supposed to bring his guys home and three of them are dead. And he was in charge that day. And he views himself as a failure. And then he's rewarded with the Navy Cross for his failure. And now he's a celebrity for his failure. And then in its infinite wisdom, we take that guy and we send him to the drill field. So the week before he gets Navy Cross, he's relieved as a drill instructor because his life's falling apart. You said he, you know, trying to kill himself was routine. Driving through a 25-mile-an-hour speed zone at 75 on his motorcycle, hoping that somebody would pull out in front of him. What do you say, drinking a fifth of Jack and hoping he didn't wake up. And then the Marine Corps sends him to Quantico, somebody's bright idea of let's send him over to the museum to stand around in his Charlies or his Blues, and he can talk about that thing all the time. Yeah, that's a great idea. And he's going out on the black tie rubber chicken circuit, where he gets to talk about it's almost like, could we have done it any worse? And so, to me, it ought to be mandatory listening because, look, if it goes right, these are the feelings that await you. What could I have done different? Right? What could I have done different? So I just want to share that this morning as I sit down and very deliberately prepare kind of this post-traumatic winning pitch. The amount of content that is resident in the All Marine Radio archives of mental health discussions, of mental health interviews is just staggering as I go through it. It's incredible. And I'm most part, you know, Jeremiah, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I hear different things now as I've changed and done this more. He talks about after he wrote his book that, you know, he said, you know, I've got people that, you know, they're not even necessarily interested in the military, but they are impacted by trauma. And, you know, some of it from rape, and he said, I get emails, and so, no, the book's a good thing. He said, good things have come out of it, right? Those good things are Grinch moments, right? Where he gets a letter, an email saying, hey, thank you. You've changed my life. And it's powerful, powerful, powerful stuff. So I wanted to share that with you. I want to share that with you, and then we'll take a break, and the chef will join us. So, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nelson at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.